Turning to Iraq now, where there have been big security improvements over the past year, but old wounds are hard to heal, and fears of fresh sectarian bloodshed persist. In one part of Baghdad, a bridge spanning the Tigris River marks an especially fragile fault line. It links Sunni and Shiite areas, both with important religious shrines. 2 years ago, more than 900 Shiite pilgrims were killed on that bridge in a stampede prompted by rumors of a suicide bomber. The bridge has been closed since then. NPR's Anne Garrels reports that residents on both sides are debating whether it should now be reopened.
In the Sunni neighborhood of Adamiya, blast walls and barbed wire line the streets. Houses are pockmarked with bullet holes, the scars of recent terror when bodies were regularly dumped here. Fifty-five-year-old Khulud al-Dayini lights a cigarette, one of her only pleasures. She had to quit her job as a magazine editor because the commute was simply too dangerous. She's still not working. Khulud fears Shiite militias, but she says fellow Sunnis, in the form of extremist groups like al-Qaeda, were just as bad. Her two nephews were kidnapped last year by Sunni gangs and haven't been seen since. She's encouraged, though, that the new U.S.-backed Sunni militias from a movement known as the Awakening are now standing up to all extremist groups in their midst.
Al-Qaeda and others like them killed everyone. They didn't spare Sunnis or Shiites and their desire to build their version of an Islamic state.
Peace here is still fragile, but Khulud thinks security is good enough to open the Imam's Bridge with the Shiite area of Qadamiya across the river.
Of course we're still afraid of shadowy groups behind the scenes who want to stoke sectarian violence, but opening the bridge would boost trade and help people make a living.
Mahmoud, a stylish young man, sells food in the small Adamiya shop he recently reopened. He, too, credits the Awakening groups with helping to secure Adamiya. He says the Shiite-led government is just plain wrong when it says the Sunni militias are a cover for insurgents.
In the beginning, there were some bad people who joined up, it's true, but they have been weeded out. The terrorist groups have completely lost the trust of the people, who now hate what they did to our city.
But Mahmoud thinks it's still too early to open the bridge. For him, it remains a symbol of fear. He'd like nothing more than to make the quick trip across the bridge to buy supplies instead of making the long detour to other markets. But he worries Shiite and Sunni extremists would also use the opening to race across and strike again, leading to another explosion of tit-for-tat killings. 13-year-old Bakr al-Razak flips through his Arabic language homework. He's finally back in school. He has many Shiite pals there, where teachers will not permit any sectarian fights. But he says he's still afraid of the Shiite militias and the predominantly Shiite police who joined them in killing Sunnis. He doesn't want them in Adamiya, and he doesn't want the bridge open yet.
When they enter Adamiya, the police treat us like the enemy. They kill, beat, and insult people. We can only think about opening the bridge when security is better.
The empty bridge has become a symbol of the contest between the contradictory impulses competing to determine Iraq's future, the tensions between Iraq's two main religious groups, and the common national culture which, in spite of everything, still has some power to bind Iraqis together. While the streets of Sunni Adamiya were quiet this weekend, just a few hundred feet away across the bridge in Qadamiya, thousands reenacted the death of one of the most revered Shiite saints. Reflecting on the violence that's ripped his city apart, Ahmad Razak, a Shiite tailor, says it was a mistake for the Shiite-led government to stack the police with an overwhelming number of Shiites.
Security forces must include people from all sides in order to coexist. In the past, Sunnis and Shiites ate and fought together. After Saddam, the way the security forces were created was wrong.
This coming from a devout Shiite. Ahmad set up a tent to feed the Shiite pilgrims, relieved there was no violence this year. The emotional display of mourning for the murder of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson 13 centuries ago marks the split between Sunni and Shiite Muslims over who is the true heir to Muhammad. And these public processions, banned under Saddam, are a dramatic sign of Shiite ascendancy in today's Iraq. Imad can understand how some Sunnis are threatened by this, but he says he and his friends bear Sunnis no ill will. He wants the bridge open so people can easily visit one another again as they used to. He says it must be a bridge of trust.
The Sunnis have shown they don't support al-Qaeda, so I don't think the violence will resume as it once did. And we need the bridge to build that trust again. It was an important trading link in the city. At the heart of the problem now is the economy. If the government would only attend to the economy, I think 99% of this terrorism would go away.
Uday Mahdi, a Shiite policeman, guards a checkpoint by the bridge. Over the past 9 months, he says Iraqi security forces have become a lot more even-handed.
The Ministry of Interior forces in the past behaved badly in Adamir. But now we work for Iraq, just for Iraq, away from sectarian battles and militias.
These kinds of comments were rare just a few months ago. Even more extraordinary, this Shiite policeman says he grieved with Sunnis when the head of the Awakening in the west of the country was assassinated late last year. He thinks security is good enough for the bridge to reopen. He would like to enjoy again the delicious food in Adamiya, and he says he's ready to welcome Sunnis who want to eat baja, the traditional dish of boiled goat's head here in Qadamiya. Ann Garrels, NPR News, Baghdad.